The ARA acknowledges the traditional owners of the land where we have recorded this podcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders past, present, and recognise Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders as Australia's first traders, who utilise a sophisticated network of trading paths that have facilitated the exchange of goods, knowledge, and culture for millennia.
Hi, I'm Paul Zara, CEO of the Australian Retailers Association, and welcome to Season 6 of the Retail Therapy Podcast, proudly brought to you by American Express. In today's retail landscape, it's vital to understand the nuance and intricacies of diversity, equality, and inclusion. It isn't just a buzzword, but a powerful force driving innovation and change across the sector. In each episode this season, we'll be focusing on the specific branch of the D&I tree, speaking to pioneers and leaders in their respective fields. Joining me for some retail therapy focusing on diversity, equality and inclusion is Dr. Manisha Amin, CEO of the Centre for Inclusive Design. Manisha is an innovation leader and social change champion, helping companies build and design products, services and policies that embrace inclusivity. With a background in strategic marketing, communication, transforming cultures and creativity, she's a thought leader in the power of thinking from the edge. Manisha, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, Manisha, let's start off by giving some context to our listeners. What is inclusive design and how is it defined?
Look, it's actually quite an easy concept. Sounds a bit complicated, but it's not. All of us are designers, right? We design emails, we design retail spaces, we design policies, we design products. So inclusive design is making sure that when we design those things, we take into account everyone, including differences in things like age, race, gender, ability, all of those different things that sometimes we forget about when we're designing things.
It's an area you've obviously very passionate about. Can you tell us a bit about how you came to be such a champion of change?
Absolutely. Look, I certainly didn't start off in inclusive design, and it's a relatively new concept, but I've always been really interested in, you know, how we create spaces and places that are awesome for people. What does that experience look like? And when I first started in this organization, it's a charity. We operate as a social enterprise. But I met some people who really were struggling with the world. And they were struggling with the world because it didn't work for them. They couldn't go to shops. They'd complained online shopping, for instance. They were unable to get to banks. And I realized that actually if we made the world better for them, we'd make the world better for all of us. So inclusive design, I think the biggest thing about this is it's not just about helping people who don't have as much as you or I do. It's actually about recognizing that when we work for those people and when we create spaces that work for people on the edge or edge users, then we're actually creating a better world for all of us.
Now, that is amazing. And you know I always love chatting with you because I always find absolute so many gems in what you have to say. Now, you know that retail is the biggest private employer sector in the country and it has a significant role to play. So do you have any examples of where retail is excelling and the area, and also the areas that we believe that we need to improve?
Look, I think COVID showed us that retailers are resilient and are able to problem solve in ways that other groups just aren't. So we saw retailers all of a sudden having different shopping hours for different parts of the community, depending on how compromised people's immune systems were. We saw retailers reaching out to regional and remote communities to make sure that people were able to access food and essential services. We've seen retailers take into account neurodiversity as well. Recently, we've worked with one of Australia's largest supermarket brands, Woolworths, and they're actually not just looking at how they can have people access their services, but they're also looking at their staff and have developed, you know, some of the world's first accessible checkout systems so that people who are wheelchair users or need different levels of cash register can actually use those registers so we can have, you know, more people with more jobs. The thing about retail I think that's so important is it's often an entry point job for people. It's their first job.
Yes.
And it's also a job for people who are often unable to get work elsewhere. So women, people from other communities and cultures, you know, especially in the small business sector, we find our space in retail.
No, very good point. I mean, it does, because it does offer a sense of belonging, but equally flexibility for women that are juggling many different roles and responsibilities. And most Australians actually started their first job in either retail or hospitality, so it has a big part to play. Now, you've used a really good example there at Woolworths, and that all credit to them for leading this with you. Do you have examples where you think we need to improve upon?
Absolutely. I think one of the challenges that retail has is that to operate a business, especially a retail business, certainty is really important, especially workforce certainty. And the other one is that you work in a defined environment. So, you know, if we're talking about physical spaces, it's normally this square and you need to fit in as much as you can in that square in a particular way. So, you know, I always say that challenge is an opportunity that we just haven't met yet, but these things are hard constraints. So some of the questions we like to ask is how might we actually provide certainty of employment in different ways so that people aren't having to work 9 to 5 every day? Mm. So if we think about people, for instance, with dynamic disability, so where your ability to work one day is different to the next day, it's really important that we somehow find a different way of thinking about employment and employment standards. It's the same for physical spaces. How might we create spaces that are more inclusive than the ones we have at the moment? I think part of this is based on the fact that our stores, like our education systems, are actually built from the 19th century, right? Mm. They haven't changed much.
Quite traditional.
Very traditional. But we as humans have changed an awful lot.
Good point.
So how might we bring 21st century know-how to these spaces that were built in the 19th century? Mm.
Do you think when you go shopping, there's this one simple thing that retailers should be doing and could be doing to be more inclusive that they simply haven't thought through that you see?
Look, there's a few of them. My personal pet peeve is the fact we still have men's and women's clothing and boys' and girls' clothing gendered and separate.
Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, I always bought my clothes from the boys' section. You know, the cardigans were warmer and they were cheaper and they were more fun.
Yeah.
And I liked trucks. And I don't understand why those definitions are still so important in today's world.
Do you think there'll be a point where there'll be more gender? And I think a good example that comes to mind for me is fragrances, because I never understood from my back history in working in department stores why there would be a male and a female fragrance. When
That's right.
It should be about what scent you like, as opposed
Absolutely.
To whether that's a floral for a guy or a something more woody for a female, then there's nothing. So it's hard to understand. So do you think there'll be more gender neutrality as we become more inclusive moving forward?
I hope so, because we're not talking about changing the clothing. Mm. I love diversity in clothing. I love the fact that we have, you know, amazing dresses and overalls and all of those things, but it would be great if we didn't label them for one particular gender. And that's a small thing. It's literally taking the sign off on the top of the ceiling and keeping everything else the same, and I'd be a lot happier. The other things that...
Yeah, there's no reason to say male or female. I completely understand.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. When it comes to toys, actually, that used to be my...
Yes.
You know, above Barbie, there'd be really clearly designed girls' toys, and above the Tonka trucks, there'd be boys' toys. And it's actually...
Exactly.
It shouldn't be... Like, people should be able to choose what they like and what they want to play with.
Exactly. So I think that's where... It's an easier fix than some of the other things.
Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And you mentioned pricing. So your example had the men's, also the boys' cardigans actually cheaper.
Yes.
So do you think that's something also that retailers should be a bit more sensitive towards when they think about inclusivity? There's no reason for price differential in any product.
No, there isn't.
No, right. Between
but
genders.
There is.
And hairdressing is a really good example. We see that a lot.
Exactly.
It should be by time rather than actual by
and
gender.
By length of hair, right? There are some people who have hair, well, some people who identify as men who have hair that's certainly a lot longer than my hair.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So
that's a really, really good point. Now, if you want to hear more about diversity, equality, and inclusion or learn more, we do have you hop on the ARA website and sign up to specifically around gender equality. But again, we're going to come back to you, Manish, because we want you to actually tell us a little bit more about what you're doing and where people can get more information. I'm going to now talk to when we stick in that within the DE&I space, it's important to recognise disability and neurodivergence. I want you to explain that a little bit for our listeners. Now, I understand you've had a lot of involvement with ADHD Australia. Can you talk us through the inequalities that even those living with ADHD or autism, for example, may experience?
Yes, I certainly can. But what I'd like to also have us think about is also what insights people with ADHD and autism can give us that actually help all of us have a better experience in retail. So one of the things that comes up quite often is that we have lots of bright lights in shops, and we often have music and a lot of other stimulus in those shops. And places like Coles have created the Coles Quiet Hour, which has then been followed by, I think, both Aldi and Woolworths, and organisations, you know, knocking the lights down a little bit and creating quiet spaces at different times. What's been interesting is that more people are shopping in these times, not just people with ADHD or autism, because we're creating spaces that are a little bit calmer and quieter. And so as we think about hyper-personalisation and making places that work for different people, we don't need to do one size fits all anymore. And I think that's where some of these benefits are. The world has a lot of choices and a lot of stimulus, but the more we get, the more overwhelmed we are as well.
And I guess you may not necessarily be autistic or have ADHD, but still appreciate that quiet time, that peaceful time to shop. So that plays to a broader audience as well.
That's exactly right. So what works on the edge often works in the middle.
Very good point. I like that. Now, in terms of making both staff and customers feel more valued, how important are getting pronouns right, do you think? Have you ever experienced this from your own perspective?
Now, I don't know how old you are, Paul, but I am part of Gen X and pronouns were really difficult for me. I have grown up identifying certain people by the way they look, as he, she, they or them. And it's a tricky one for people like me who are a little bit older. Young people seem to be able to do this magically.
They got with the program real quick. And I'm the same Gen X, but I'm sure there's about a decade.
I'm not sure about that. But, you know, when you look back at the research, one of the things people from our generation say is this is uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it's not grammatically correct. Well, actually, if you go back to Shakespearean times or Jane Austen, actually the key pronoun was they, them.
Okay. Right. That's interesting. I did not know that.
No. We changed from they, them to male first around, I think it was Victorian times, when people would say, you know, if children go to school, he must do his homework. Mm. The use of the word guys.
Right.
All of a sudden, the male word became the dominant word for everyone. Now what we do is it's male first, then female, then them, they.
Yes.
Okay. So this is only a really new thing in history, actually. It used to be they, them for all of us. In the past.
Very interesting. I did not know that.
No. So when we think about this and we think about our customers and our employees, one of the things we want to do is make people feel really welcome. So pronouns are great because what they can do is, if you can imagine, all of a sudden people are walking into your shop or your employees, when you're talking to them, you're speaking their language.
Yes.
And you're speaking in a way that works for them, not just for you. So there are words today that I would never use that my, you know, one generation ago or two generations ago we used. Now if I hear those words, I feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
So for millennials, for Gen X, for Gen Zs, these are the words. Pronouns matter to them.
Yes.
So it's a really great way of actually making yourself an employer of choice and a business of choice.
So we should be asking for pronouns. I guess when you think about taking it back to a retail environment, through the application form process, through name badges on people in store, so we're clear about how they identify.
That's right.
Do you see that having – these are the protocols that we should be thinking about in the industry?
Look, I think they're really good. And if you can't do that, just use – you can use them, they.
Hmm.
You know, if you use neutral words like people or humans rather than he or she, it means that you're not – creating an extra barrier that you don't need there. And it's a signifier for people that this place is inclusive.
Yeah, no, good point. And I think it comes down to also a bit of, for our generation, a bit more self-correction and relearning, but that's okay. Like, I often think about too, when you're addressing a group of people, saying ladies and gentlemen now is totally inappropriate because people may not identify as a lady or a gentleman. So in fact, it's hello people or welcome team or something that actually...
Or just welcome,
welcome,
right?
Yeah, yeah, you know, good point. Very, very good point.
We don't even need, when we're welcoming people, do we need to know their sex or gender to say welcome, right? So I think sometimes we can keep it simple and we can, that helps us to make things easier, less and less complicated, because I think one of the problems with diversity and inclusion is there are so many things that we have to remember. It's really hard to get it right and it can seem quite intimidating, but if we keep it simple, like a hello, you're not going to offend anybody.
I always often laugh because people get the LGBTIQ A+.
Yep.
And it just rattles off for me because I'm sort of in the community. I can actually rattle off quite easily. But for many, they get caught after a few letters and they say, and the rest of the alphabet. And this is the whole thing. It's okay if you sort of have a go, but there might be easier ways to remember.
Absolutely.
Keeping it simple.
And for something like that, one of the really great things you can do is stickers. Right, so a sticker at the front of your outlet saying that we are LGBTQI+ friendly means you don't have to language everything.
Good point.
There are other ways that we can show that we are great allies without having to, you know, be perfect all the time.
Yeah, and it's interesting because American Express did a really good example of that through World Prior, where they had a shop small messaging, an Amex messaging that actually had the diversity welcome on there. And I thought that it was a really nice way of actually saying that, you know, all walks of life were particularly welcome, but they've talked to the diversity of the community.
That's right.
Now, what advice would you give retail leaders to drive better outcomes, do you think, for inclusivity and inclusive design?
Well, the first one is that in the past, inclusion and inclusivity was seen as a cost. In our research, so the Benefits of Designing for Everyone report, you know, we rocked the numbers, and we think there's about $4 billion worth of potential increased retail industry revenue from better designed products and services just in the footwear area.
Wow.
I think it's footwear and clothing, household goods, sorry, household goods, footwear and clothing,
wow,
and personal accessory sales. So we've picked one of your line items.
Yes.
That's $4 billion. You know, we're not talking about small change here.
No.
And that's just looking at one area. The other thing we know is that when we work for the edge, so if you design something inclusively, you're going to get 3 to 4 times your intended audience. So, for instance, all those people who go to Quiet Hour who would normally not go into the shops otherwise.
Very good point. And retailers generally are having a quite challenging time. So this is a really good opportunity to actually get to an untapped market potentially for many in the retail community.
That's exactly right. And, you know, depending on what your product is, there are a lot of products out there that most people, you know, need, but there are also products that they want. And we've seen, for instance, with footwear where companies have brought out inclusive products, those products are gone before the people with disabilities or the people who are on the edge can actually even reach them. This is something that people want and they expect, and younger people are expecting this from their employers as well.
Now, Manisha, some of these concepts may be good if you're in a large company because you've got resources, but if you look at small businesses who have limited resources, how can they make meaningful strides towards inclusivity? Now, in saying that, what you've just talked about, there's many things you've talked about on this podcast. Actually, we're not talking about big investment in capital, are we? We're just talking about simple things that people can do differently. In fact, many of those things you mentioned actually probably could save money because you're not putting up signs calling out specific genders as an example.
Exactly. So I'd like to approach this question in two ways. One is from a big business perspective, right? So when we talk about larger retailers, one of the things that I think we need to be really cognizant of is that if you do your research, if you look at customers who are not reaching you, it's cheaper and you get better data than if you do research on the mainstream in the middle. And often what happens is people come to us and they ask us to do research or they ask us to do testing, and we're the add-on. We have now done research with some of the largest organisations in Australia, including Australia Post and the ATO, and realised actually with their data we've done double tests.
Right.
And we're about a tenth of the price, but a higher quality of information. Wow. And priority. So the first thing I'd say to large organisations is that actually we've been doing it the old school way, the 19th century way. If you move to the 21st century, you'll get better outcomes. For small organisations and smaller retailers, they have something that large organisations don't. They have connection to community.
Good point.
So the first thing I'd be saying is have a look around your community. Who is in your area, whether you're in the city or in a suburban area, and what are the small things you can do to make a difference rather than having to look for big things? Inclusion doesn't have to be massive. It doesn't mean you have to change your storefront around. You know, obviously that would be wonderful, but it can't always happen.
No.
So it's
a real mindset shift, isn't it, first up, and then the rest of it just around having that specific filter in the decisions that you're making when it comes to the way your stores are laid out, the language that you use, the way you welcome people.
That's exactly right. And I think the other part is don't be hard on yourself. Mm. You know, this is a journey. 10 years ago, I had no idea that gender was a spectrum. You know, it just hadn't clocked in my head.
Whereas
today I do. What are people going to say 10 years from now that we don't know today?
Yeah.
So things will change. Inclusion will change. So be kind to yourselves and just give it a crack.
Yeah, it's a learning opportunity really for everybody,
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Now, I'd like to talk a little bit more about inclusivity in the fact that more understanding from you some of the benefits you believe of hiring for difference. And is it important to have that diversity in your workforce, do you think?
Look, it's critical. So I think, Paul, you spoke before about the LGBTQI cohort or group. Can you imagine if you walk into shops and there's no one ever that looks like you or seems like you?
Mm.
You know, and we know that when we see people who are like us, it helps us to fit in. It also helps organisations to know where the problems and potential challenges are, you know. So if you're designing policies around women and there are no women in the room, if you're designing policies for men, people who identify as men, and there are no men in the room, are you going to get it right? Maybe not. Mm. If we, you know, the classic is my home. If I try to design things for my, you know, 17-year-old or speak in the way my 17-year-old does, I'm going to get it wrong. But if I ask them, I'm more likely to get it right. So who do you want in your organisations? And I think it's really important that the diversity we see in our customers is reflected in the diversity of our employees.
And on that note, lovely to catch up. Dr. Manisha Amin, thank you so much. Appreciate you joining us for some retail therapy. All the best for the work you do at the Centre for Inclusive Design and best of luck in the future. I would now like to welcome Mitchell Kurius, Chief Financial Officer at Barbecues Galore, to the Amex Lounge. Barbecues Galore has been supplying Australians with high-quality barbecues and expert advice since 1977. With more than 90 stores throughout the country, Barbecues Galore leads the barbecue retailing market and is a specialist in outdoor furniture and heating. Barbecues Galore has been an American Express merchant for more than two decades. Mitch, welcome.
Hi, Paul. Great to be here with you.
Barbecues Galore is an iconic Australian brand that started as a small business more than 45 years ago. Mitch, can you describe the recent journey of the brand, its challenges, and the transformation over the past 5 years?
The recent journey of Barbecues Galore over the last 5 years has really been to stay true to the heritage of the brand whilst developing our platforms around brand, team, and technology to support the changing dynamics of the consumer through this period. We've seen through the last 5 years some significant macro disruptions from bushfires of 2019 to COVID to supply disruptions. And through that period, the organisation has really galvanised and in really strong position looking forward.
Now, Mitch, it's a tricky time for retailers at the moment as cost of living pressures start to take their toll. How is Barbecues Galore adapting to this and what does the future hold?
A core focus for the organisation is to really focus on demonstrating value through the assortment at every touch point of the assortment. And the team have done a tremendous job through the little while to ensure that we have new, innovative, and sometimes exclusive product to really surprise and delight our customers. We also recognise that cost of living pressures are not just on the shoulders of customers, but also on our team. And we've done a really, put in a lot of work in around ensuring that Barbecues Galore is an employer of choice and supporting our team with those cost of living pressures.
Now, Barbecues Galore purpose is bringing people together around the flame. Those great connections formed around food and fire. Now, how do you go about developing those connections for your customers and your colleagues, and why is this important?
Humans have been sharing treasured moments around a flame for millennia, Paul, and that gives us some really rich material to work with, tooling the team up with their career pathways and help them with that whole sales process. Helps us to deliver on the purpose to customers as well.
Mitch, thank you for joining us today in the Amex Lounge. All the best for the future.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for joining us in the Amex Lounge for some retail therapy. Make sure you subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify. We can be found wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts. For more information about the work we do at the Australian Retailers Association, head to our website, retail.org.au. Follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, wherever you love to connect. All the links can be found in the show notes.